Guy Code with Renan Osuere.
Welcome to another episode of the Guy Code. I am Renan Osuere. Now, guys, I understand it has been a while since I published a new episode, but I am back with a very timely subject for us to discuss. We're going to talk about abortion in Kenya. And as we get into this discussion and analyze this subject, there are some facts we need to understand to better grasp this concept. I'll get right into it. It is estimated that 465,000 abortions occur in Kenya annually, a majority of which are unsafe. Now, unsafe abortions are the abortions that take place maybe in an alleyway, maybe at home, the ones where the expectant lady swallows, injects, consumes in any way, shape, or form harmful concoctions, inserting foreign objects, all that, and any procedure that is undertaken by an individual who is not a medical professional. Now, these unsafe abortions account over 13% of all cases of maternal mortality and 60% of all gynecological emergency hospital admissions. Now, right off the bat, guys, we are hit by the huge number of abortions occurring in Kenya. I actually did not know. Did you? I don't think so. But unless you really researched on this subject beforehand, this number, this figure really shocked me. 465,000 occur in this country annually, right? Majority of which are unsafe. And these unsafe abortions, almost 15% of the time, occur in the death of the expectant mother and child, and 60% of them end up in very critical condition. These victims end up in very critical condition and need urgent hospital and medical care. Wow. We go on. Now, 50% of post-abortion care patients reporting to health facilities were less than 25 years. 70% of them were between 10 to 19 years of age. Now, we're just getting to understand the demographic of these individuals who procure these abortions. They're young, under 25 years. 70% of them are preteens and teenagers. Can you imagine that? Now, the treatment of unsafe abortions cost the country $5 million annually. Right? By the treatment, we mean salaries for the individuals who, you know, take care of these abortion victims, the equipment, the medicine, all that cost the country $5 million annually. Now, these statistics are really astounding, and they really paint the real picture of what is happening as far as abortion in this country. Right? We can't just bury our head in the sand and say that is a woman's problem, that is a woman's problem, a preteen problem, a young people's problem, or whatever. That is why I really found it significant that I get to be involved in this discussion, because these individuals are the people we walk past every day, that we work with, that could even be our family, and we never know what they're going through. 500,000 abortions occur in this country annually. That's a number that we can't just brush off in a country of what, almost 50 million now. So what do we do, guys? What can we do with all these information, the reality, facing the reality that it is when it comes to abortion? What do we do? I have 4 points I want to share with you guys that could give us a direction, and also could give us a lot to think about as far as when it comes to dealing with this subject. The first one, I decided to take a point of being proactive. Guys, we need to take care of our own sexual health as far as using protection when engaging in sexual activity, right? Why? Because 70% of women seeking post-abortion care were not using any form of contraceptive before getting pregnant. 70% of women seeking post-abortion care were not using any form of contraceptive before getting pregnant. Now, she was not using any contraceptive and you don't use any contraceptive. Then she gets expectant. She wants to procure, undertake an abortion or go through that process. And I'm seeing with the statistics right now, knowing that there's a 50% chance that she could die, 60% chance that the procedure could go horribly wrong, that she will need urgent medical care, and we don't know if she could survive that experience. So what do we do to try and avoid all this scenario? We become proactive, we use protection, we take care of our own sexual health, right? If she's not taking care of hers, we take care of ours. Not just for our own health, of course, we know that, right? Because of other things like, you know, diseases and all that, infections, no one wants that. But also avoiding this whole situation, because for any of us who, we may know people who undertook an abortion, or you know someone who their partner undertook an abortion, it's a experience that many people don't want to talk about, and many people want to erase from their memory. You know, it's not a thing that you really want to share with a lot of people. And to really avoid all that, I suggest, and I find it very fair, to take care of our own health, use protection, you know, take care of our own sexual health. That is point number one. Point number two is fatherlessness. When I saw the statistics on the age between the age of 10 to 19 years, this is 70%, 17% of post-abortion care patients were 10 to 19 years, 17%. These are preteens and teenagers, children, right? We know for sure that women need father figures to mold them growing up, because you can't imagine an 11-year-old going to the hospital for abortion complications. 11 years. As early as 10 years. And you can imagine certain individual, how this experience will mold them for the rest of their life. Maybe they didn't grow up in an environment where they had access to information, or they didn't grow up in a community where there were strong values being embraced. So she fell victim to someone who is a predator and took advantage of her, and now she feels that the only way out is procuring an abortion. So we need to understand the role of fatherlessness, the role of being a father, being a strong father figure in a home, and how it is so important that you really teach the right values to your children, your boys and girls, right? So that they know how to take care of themselves in all aspects of health, in all aspects of safety, right? And this, I believe, will really make an impact in handling all these numbers, handling all this serious, very severe situation we're dealing with, as far as young people, very young people, undertaking this procedure. And you can imagine that many of them are unsafe, because definitely most of them don't have the resources to procure a safe one, right? So you can imagine what they're taking in, what they're consuming, in hopes to procure this abortion, and how this will affect them long term, even if they survive. It's a really bad thing to even imagine in a society that this is happening in our society. So what we do as the men, we become right fathers. We make sure we create environments we instill the right values that will ensure that our daughters are safe, that they know how to handle their own health. You know, whoever will teach them, they get the right information. That's point number two. Number three, it is about autonomy. Now, this is something I got to understand from research, and I found it very, very interesting to get to know. And let me also bring some context to this point. About 3 months ago in this country, something very interesting happened as far as a ruling. Now, a Malindi High Court judge by the name Ruben Nyakundi, Malindi is a place in this country, made a ruling in a case involving a 16-year-old girl who was miscarrying and a health worker who treated her on charges of procuring an abortion. Now, the story goes that this 16-year-old girl, she was expectant, then she miscarried, and she presented herself to a hospital, and the health worker who took care of her, treated her, was charged on that she was procuring an abortion, claiming that the child was alive and the health worker procured an abortion. That's why the child is dead. However, they were dismissed of all charges. And a statement that the judge made is something that I really want us to consider here. He said, and I quote, "Forcing someone to carry an unwanted pregnancy to term or forcing them to seek out an unsafe abortion is a violation of their human rights, including the right to privacy and body autonomy." Autonomy, right? Now, this statement really helped me as an individual understand why they say it's pro-choice. What are they choosing? When you hear pro-choice, it's very easy to ask, what are they choosing? They're choosing their own independence, their own freedom over their body, right? And they don't want that right being infringed upon. I'm just sharing the facts here, and I really want you guys also to comprehend them and interpret them and dissect them as you feel right according to your own principle. That was his statement. Forcing them to seek out an unsafe abortion is a violation of their human rights, including the rights to privacy and body autonomy. So you understand that the court system or the judge in this particular case was protecting the individual's right to control her own body, the individual's independence of choice when it comes to her own body. And this was echoed by a doctor in the States. Her name was Danielle Jones. I will quote what she said. She said, "You can't make people use their body to keep someone else alive. You can't give a right to a fetus that no other human has, which is the right to use someone else's body without expressed and ongoing consent." Right? So this was a very interesting statement she made, because she addressed how people say that, you know, the fetus has a right to life. She said, no problem, that's fine. Yes, you can give the fetus all the rights she has, that you can believe that life starts at whatever stage. However, she said it is wrong to give a fetus the right that no other human has, which is the right to use someone else's body without expressed and ongoing consent. So we are understanding that this doctor in this case is saying that, yes, you can give this fetus a right, but you can only go so far. That right that you give them should not infringe on the right of the individual carrying the fetus, right? You cannot give the fetus the right to demand that the individual has to keep them alive. So we see in this situation a conflict of rights. She says, yes, the child has a right to live, but the child does not have a right to demand that the mother in this case ensures his or her survival. This is something very heavy to digest, because now it brings about a discussion: what really is the right way to see all this? Right? Whose rights are greater than whose? Whose rights come first? You have a right, but when your right infringes on my rights, then your right can be taken away from you. And that is the same for infants and fetuses. Does that make sense to you guys? For those who are listening, you could definitely value your feedback on Twitter at GuyCodeKenya. I really value your feedback for all the episodes I publish, but this statement was very profound for me, and it really takes a lot to digest and dissect on, as far as human rights, whose right is greater than whose, whose right come first, right? You can't make people use their body to keep someone else alive. So is it that the individuals who support pro-life are seen as individuals who are infringing on the choice and the autonomy and the sovereignty of the mothers and her choice over her own body? Are they seen as the ones claiming that they are infringing on these rights, that they are forcing these individuals to keep someone else alive? And is it that the pro-life individuals are crossing the line when it comes to supporting rights? That yes, you can support the rights of the fetus, but don't do it in a way that infringes on my own rights and my own autonomy of my own body, since the fetus is hosted in the individual's body. It's a lot to take in, but definitely we really need to dissect that, have conversations about it, and understand what right tramples another in. Should we also add an aspect of responsibility? Good question. So that was number three. It is about autonomy. It's about sovereignty. Should we really do all we can to protect the individual's sovereignty and autonomy in these situations? Or should we hold them to account of responsibility, that they are responsible for this pregnancy and must carry it to term? Good question. What do we do? Let's have a discussion about it. And definitely we can't finish this on this just one episode, but I really wanted to share with these rulings, these statements to you guys, just to have a better picture, a better material when it comes to dissecting this subject. And lastly, I want to share with you guys is community involvement, right? Almost 7 women die every day from abortion and complications. Almost 7 women die every day from abortion and complications. The society should come together to address this issue and what causes women to feel this is their only option. Now, as I was doing my own research as far as abortion in this country, definitely I got to understand that some of the individuals who opt for this alternative are the ones who actually went through a sexual assault ordeal, you know, criminal, very serious, and they felt stigmatized by the society. We can't also bury our heads in the sand and say that, you know, sexual assault doesn't happen in this society. It does. Rape happens. We haven't really covered that in this episode, but we might in others. And we really need to understand that as a society, are we doing our part to ensure that everyone is safe, from women to men, right? Because if an individual falls victim to a predator, a criminal, who takes advantage of them, who assaults them, and through that ordeal they get expectant, and now they feel that they need to terminate this pregnancy, could we have, as a society, stopped this ordeal from the first place? Could we have ensured that this individual is safe, and individuals who have the tendency to assault and, you know, participate in these crimes are brought to book and rehabilitated or punished all the same? And we really need to, as a society, get to understand how do we deal with the root of this problem, especially addressing the issue of sexual assault that happens, not the claims, that the ones that really happen and tend to result in these pregnancies that are unintended. What can we as a society help to do to stop these predators from roaming around the streets and ensuring that our daughters, our sisters, our wives are safe? So we need to get involved as a community to really handle this situation. These are just 4 points I wanted to share with you guys. Let me just do a quick rerun. Is number one, I said we need to be proactive about our sexuality as men using protection. Number two is fatherlessness. We need to stand up and become role models in our society. You know, we don't want our daughters in their preteen and teenage years having to deal with facing the alternative of abortion. We don't want that. Number three, we need to understand it's about autonomy. We need to understand, for those who say it's pro-choice, what are they choosing? What is their argument? What is their base, right? And lastly, we need to involve ourselves in the discussion, all of us as a community. We don't say this is just a woman's problem or this is just a young people's problem. This is a problem as a society at large. And we can't fully dissect this in just one episode. We really need to have ongoing discussions about it and understand from the legislation, from the society, from even the medical sector, how best to have a very thriving community that is based on strong values and can be really can form the individuals we need in our society, in our country, in the future years. So these are just a couple of things I wanted to share with you guys. I really appreciate your feedback. On Twitter, at GuyCodeKenya, you can reach out to me via DM. I really appreciate your feedback. This is a subject that I found very timely. I hope you get to learn something and get to understand some facts that will really help you dissect this subject better. Until next time, guys, we shall talk soon. Bye.
Guy Code with Renan Oswere.